Well, welcome everyone to our Country Living Forum. Before we start, let's just pray. Father in heaven, we thank you for your goodness to us and the fact that you have a plan for our lives, for our families, for our communities. And Lord, I pray that as we discuss living in the country, and as we share our experiences, that you'll direct our discussion. That you'll be praised and honoured, and that we'll be able to learn from each other's experience and how you have led us. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Amongst the group of people that we have here this afternoon, we have quite a range of experiences of living in the country. So we have some that have lived in the country all their lives, some that have lived remotely, maybe even in the outback, as we would call it in Australia. We have folk who have lived their lives in very densely populated centres, and some that are in the middle of a transition, and also some that have made a transition from living in urban areas to the country. So, Justin and Yvette, I'll introduce people to start with. Justin and Yvette. I've just presented in our Country Living series here at Cultivate and shared a lot of their experience, but hopefully we can get a few more juicy details out of them as we go around. David and his family live in the suburbs of Adelaide and are very soon to make their transition to a country property they've bought south of Adelaide. And then Jeffrey is living in Brisbane after coming to Australia from Indonesia via Malaysia, or Singapore, sorry. The island metropolis of Singapore, and now live in Adelaide also. All right, and if we come this way, Desley, my wife, well, she's a city girl as well, but we knocked that out of her a few years ago. And then we've got a couple of country girls at heart, and then we have Arena, who grew up in Lightning Ridge, and then we had Jana, who grew up in country Germany. Northern Germany? Northern Germany. Freezing cold country. Okay, I'm going to skip over Justin and Yvette because we've heard a bit from them to start with. David, I'm wondering if you might kick off our discussion in just briefly explaining or describing the pathway that God has led you to this point. What life was like growing up and as a child and a young man, and what sort of influence has caused this transition that you've gone through to the point where you now have bought a property in country Australia and you're moving your family there?
I wasn't expecting it, but I'll try to summarize it. I was born and raised in South Korea, and like my parents moved into a country like when I was young, when I was 5 years old, and then I was there. But like it was more like my father and mother was a farmer, and I'm just, you know, taking along. But I wasn't thinking too much about country living or whatnot. I was just living there. But once I went to middle school and high school, they sent me to boarding school, like Adventist boarding school, which is in the city. So at that point, my experience stopped. But like I wasn't actually enjoying it at that time when I was young. It wasn't my decision. It was my parents' decision. So I didn't think about it. But slowly, I finished my uni and whatnot. I wanted to study a bit more, and that prompted me to moved to Australia because my sister-in-law wanted to move to Australia because of the wants that they wanted to escape from the hectic life in big city. So I wanted to try. At the same time, I can improve my English and stuff like that. So we came, and I was just doing normal thing. I wasn't really to do with any country living thing. But slowly, I don't know, somehow God helped me to find my own relationship with God, as opposed to my parents' relationship, because I was, you know, second-generation Adventist. So I started to be more involved in the church and whatnot, and I moved to Melbourne because of my job, and I went there. I met a really enthusiastic group of people that really focuses on, like, evangelism or, like, looking after your spiritual side of things. So they helped me to realize a bit more about what it means to be a Christian. And then after that, I was re-examining my life, and I was... My trade is software engineering, so I sit in front of a computer all day long. I was not unhappy, but I wasn't too happy either. So I was, you know, looking at the options. But then slowly I was talking to my friends, and they were interested in growing some things and going out to the nature more often. And that allowed me to consider what kind of life that I had when I was young, as opposed to my kids' experience now. So although I'm in Australia, which is more, which allows you to have more experience in the nature than South Korea, but my children, I felt like I didn't want them to go through the thing that I have gone through. I didn't want them to be in the city growing up all the way, although I was in the country for when I was young. But so I'm hoping that God is leading us to a better situation for my family, and also I feel like I want more from the school, but at the same time I understand why the school can't be run as, you know, how I would like to run. So I'm still also considering homeschooling too, if that's an option, but we try not to go too fast, so we want to move into country first and then see how we go with the settling in, and then we'll decide whether homeschooling is something that we can do or not. So I think he's still allowing me to find a job that is freeing myself not to be in a commute. I can work from home all day long if I wanted to. So I think God is showing me the way that I can go to where I wanted to go, and it feels like he's leading us. Sometimes I'm questioning whether it's the right path or not, but yeah, we are on a journey, so yeah, that's where I'm at.
So those of us that have made the transition from living in the city to the country realize that you've got some challenges in front of you. And they'll be different for every circumstance, but Desley, growing up in suburban Brisbane and then making a transition to the country in Western Australia, do you want to share some of the challenges that you faced?
Sure. God was very gentle on me. He transitioned me slowly. I grew up in Brisbane. I went to college at Avondale, which is semi-rural at that time, and then I was a teacher in Goulburn, which is another small town. So he kind of transitioned me out of the city and into small rural, and then I went to Western Australia. I realized a lot of things about myself that I didn't know, like that I couldn't see in the dark because all my life it had never been dark. And so walking at night, I would actually hold onto Rod's shirt because I couldn't see where I was going and he would just lead me. I realized I had illogical fears of spiders, snakes, anything that creeps and crawls. So I had to deal with them as well. And I purposed in my heart to deal with them before my children adopted my same illogical fears. Because I knew that if I was afraid of spiders and wanted to stomp on every spider I saw or spray it, that that's, my children would have that. If I was afraid of snakes, then my children would have that. And I didn't want them to have these fears. I wanted them to learn to grow up responsible and thinking and be able to, yeah, just live with nature. So I had these kind of things. I had not being able to just go down the shops. I had to learn how to plan ahead. There's meals, anything that we wanted, plan ahead so that I'm not having to, well, we just don't go to town every day. All sorts of just little things in life that we take for granted when we live in suburbia. Even your mail, I mean, where we were initially, we only got our mail twice a week. So you had to be prepared for that. And you couldn't just post a letter whenever you wanted. And when I was young, we didn't have internet to pay bills either. So you had to be organized and you had to get to town before the bills needed paying. And it was just a different, totally different life for me. A more, I guess, thoughtful life, mindful life, as opposed to just life happened in the city.
Did you find it in some ways stressful as you're going through this learning experience?
It's kind of hard to remember.
That's right, you had six children.
Yeah. Stressful. I think God had prepared me and I embraced it. There were frustrations, probably more I would call it frustrations. We had a unique experience, as you all will have unique experiences. No one's experience is going to be the same. But when we first moved on to our own property in WA, I had no electricity either, except for this clunky old generator that, anyway, it was frustration. You couldn't just wash when you wanted to wash. You couldn't vacuum when you wanted to vacuum. You couldn't have an electric fridge, the convenience of cold food. You couldn't have an electric or gas oven. You had to have a wood oven. Just such a steep learning curve for me that I think... it was very challenging in that way. I don't think it was stressful, but I think I had some frustrations and I had a very steep learning curve.
I just want to ask you also, were you successful in overcoming your fear of these critters and your children? Where are they at with their fears of these critters?
I've overcome my fear of the creatures. I still have a dislike for them, but I'm not afraid of them. I would sit at my second child is a boy and he is a nature lover. And I would just be sitting at my computer trying to get some work done. You know how you can just get really focused? All of a sudden there'd be this huge huntsman in front of my face and I'd be like, ah! He just delighted in doing that to me. And I had to learn to go, oh, that's beautiful. So I've learnt to control my emotions and my reactions, because I still don't like it. Like big fat frogs. Like, I'm not afraid of them, but I don't particularly like them. My children have no fear, none whatsoever. They'll allow spiders to run all over them. They go and pick up a snake. They have no fear. They have respect, but they have no fear. So by God's grace, I've managed to not pass that on to them.
So Desley mentions a generator. I was a bit offended when she called it clunky because it just ran. Oh, it's just a beautiful machine. Challenge was, it was an old 32-volt system made in the 1950s, and the batteries were pretty old. And that was her challenge. Yvette, did you face any challenges like that?
Just one more thing. I had to wear, summer and winter, I had to wear UGG boots to do my washing because my machine shorted, and when I stuck my fingers in the water, it would zap me. So if I wore my UGG boots, it grounded me. So
why didn't you call the electrician? Desley hasn't yet mentioned the sorts of accommodation that she lived in when we first shifted to the country. I think we've all heard of the great Aussie shed, okay? And David and Jeffrey, I hope you've got a good shed on your property. Do you have houses to move into? Well, aren't your wives privileged? Because my wife, nor Justin's wife, had that privilege of living in a house when we shifted to the country. Yvette!
Give me that before you... Give me that before you go to my wife. I want to do a bit of background because I know where you're going. The challenges are there for a blessing, and the challenges are given to us by God. Can I explain?
Please.
I grew up in suburbia, out of northwestern suburbia of Sydney, quiet neighbourhood. When I was 12, we moved on 5 acres, a bit further northwest, and we had horses and geese and chooks and sheep and...
Sorry you had geese.
That was all right until they had babies, and then a little bit aggressive. And then when we married, we moved out country / wilderness. We had a national park behind us and in front of us. We're off the grid, tank water, garbage bin was 5 k's down the road, letterbox 5 k's down the road, dirt road, all that sort of caper. But it was a really nice house. It was a very, very nice house.
That's a loaded statement.
And God told us to leave. And now you can ask my wife the questions of the challenges. Now you're going to ask my wife what's it like living in a shed, and living in a shed for about how long? 7? I reckon it's about 6 months, but she's telling me it's 8 years. What's it like, Yvette?
Well, it's not so bad now, but when we first moved onto the property, all that was there was the shed. We had no water laid on, no kitchen, no anything, no power. So to do any showering, you had to heat up water or use a solar shower. It just literally took all day just to live. You couldn't do anything else. There was no refrigeration, so we just had like an esky with ice in it, and things would go off really quickly in that condition. So it was quite tough, but because we're, I guess, really excited moving onto our property, it didn't worry me as much. But now the 8 years has clicked over, I'm like really eager to get into our house.
We're very, very close to moving into our house. Yes, I'm owner builder.
Yeah, Desley's had a few experiences like that as well. We first shifted into a 3 metre square tin garden shed. And we had a kerosene powered fridge in one corner, a small table in the other one underneath the window. And then during the daytime we had a mattress on our recycled brick floor.
Is this in WA or you're talking here?
No, this is in Western Australia. Yeah. And during the night we'd sleep on it, and during the day we'd stand it up against the wall so we had somewhere to walk in the shed. And we lived in that until we built a shed, which was probably about 8 metres by 4 or 5 metres. Once again, recycled bricks just laid on the floor on top of plastic to keep the dampness out. And I went to a nearby sawmill that had all these huge piles of roundbacks, as we call them. You know, it's after the sawmilling's finished and there's part of the log still left that they can no longer cut timber out of. And so I dragged all these home on the trailer, and I built another shed, couldn't call it a house, with all of these roundbacks standing up, okay, and I just trimmed them and butted up to each other so that the cracks were only small, and we lived in that. And then we sold that property to shift the K up the road, where we bought a larger property, and we built a mud brick house there. But before the house was a 5 metre by 5 metre shed. And by this time, we had a little baby. And I don't know, the whole experience was fantastic. I agree, Justin, it seems like about 6 months. But that didn't cure Desley, because just recently, a couple of years ago, we shifted into the latest house that I built. And before that, we lived for what?
Too long. 4 years.
4 years in some temporary accommodation. And
what was the temporary accommodation?
It wasn't a shed.
And we're talking about your children... Sleeping in, and we're talking your children sleeping in swags, I do believe.
Yeah, so our accommodation was a caravan, and that acted as the kitchen, and there was a couple of little bedrooms on the end where our younger children slept. And then there was a, what do you call it, cool room panels sort of thing, solid annex on the caravan, which was fine. It was a large space, and there was a bathroom in one corner. But when you've got 6 kids, a relatively large space isn't really much space at all. And, you know, we had a lounge, and our double bed was in one corner of it, and then there was a dining room table and Desley's office. And, you know, so it was really small, and there certainly wasn't enough space for our children, to our older children, to sleep in there. So for nearly 4 years, they slept in their swags. I guess we're all familiar with what a swag is. And so when it was raining, they dragged it over into the shed, which was nearby, and when it was clear, they just dragged it somewhere in the paddock under a tree or somewhere wherever they wanted. And yeah, they did that for 4 years. That wore thin with them after a while. And the house had got to the stage where, you know, the roof was on, etc., and they decided they'd go and sleep in there, so they dragged their swags up there.
I understand you're the moderator. Can I ask you a question? Do you think your children resent the fact that they lived camping for 4 years non-stop, living in a swag, not having their own bedroom with their own stuff? Because that's something I'm battling with my daughter.
Look, as you're asking that question, I'm trying to think, and I can't remember any. They got sick of it, you know, especially in summer when it was wet and hot. But I can't remember it going to resentment. Desley?
No, there are times when they will talk about it. It depends who they're talking to. You know how children can be. They don't resent it. They enjoyed it. They enjoyed getting into their house. They love having their rooms now. However, they're still happy at the moment. We have our house full of the Dysingers. They're more than happy to get into their swags and sleep back out in the paddock. It's not something that they never want to do again because they had to do for 4 years. So it sounds like a really hard thing for children. I think even if they look back on it during a period of their life and think that was hard, when they actually get older and they can look back on the benefits of the life that they've lived, they will appreciate it. You know how it is when we're adults. We can look back with a new perspective than when we're children. And as parents, sometimes we have to make decisions that are best for our children, but it's not what they want. And what they want is not always the best thing for them. You know, it's like any child that would be happy just to eat ice cream for tea. But is that best? No. So we don't allow that. And we have to make those decisions in a lot of areas for our children. And when we want our children to grow in an environment where the world's not pulling at them the whole time to conform to the world, when we want to protect them from that, or when we want to give them a lifestyle where they will have practical skills that will serve them anywhere they go, anytime, any country, sometimes that takes some hard decisions and some uncomfortable living. But it's, I think, eventually, those that may think it was a bad time of their life, I think they'll be able to look back on it as parents, especially when they have their own children, and recognise the sacrifice that their parents made for them and the reasons why the parents made that choice. Sometimes we have to wait for that. Children aren't always the most grateful.
I think there's two issues here. Like, if you've got bucket loads of money, country living's a breeze in many aspects. So we're talking people on a tight budget, the four of us, and that comes with extra challenges. But we were living in the country before, and like I said, we had a really nice house. It only had 2 bedrooms, so we'd have had to put another bedroom on. And over time, you forget the few problems. You know, the solar system needed to be expanded and stuff. But not a huge amount of money. I'm spending a lot more money down where I am than I ever did there. So it's a tight budget on top of it as well. It can be a real challenge. But it helps you keep hold of Christ. Like, I think, because we often ask, why did we move where we were? And people see, I showed a picture. We had it on the computer for our forum. I showed it to your sister, and she said, "Why did you leave there?" "It was because God told us." So we got to look back and think, why, our character must have needed the challenges. We just must have been, smooth sailing, I think. Don't you think? It had challenges, but nothing like we're going through, So, yeah. So.
I really appreciate that perspective, Justin, because I don't want to push this analogy too far, but when the children of Israel were way out in the middle of the desert, if someone wandered past and saw what challenges they were experiencing, you'd understand that person saying, "Why did you leave Egypt?" The thing was, they were following the cloud. And that's what you were doing as well. And it's really important for us to remember that, why we're doing it, to understand what our motive is. And I know John Deisinger over in the Market Gardening stream is repeatedly repeating, don't even think about launching out into market gardening unless you know you are led by God to do it.
A calling.
It needs to be a calling. Otherwise, it's just too hard. We need to have the conscious understanding that this is God's will and we're not making it up in our madness. Because otherwise, we'll turn back. We will. We need that surety that this is God's will for our lives and that of our families.
Satan's told me many a time I made a mistake. And these gentlemen here moving to the country, Satan will tell them as well. I mean, I said in our workshop that church members will tell you you're doing the wrong thing. Mainly because they're feeling guilty because they know they should be in the country but they're not. And so you got these voices. So you must know that God's called you to. You must know the scripture behind it, the spirit of prophecy. So when the challenges come through, you can work your way through it.
So David, when he was sharing his brief testimony, explained how his parents made the decision to shift into the country in South Korea. And now he had no choice. David had no choice about that. And the experience wasn't really the best for you at that time from your perspective. Children are powerfully impacted by the decisions we make, obviously. And I'm just wondering whether Shan... So 4 or 5 years ago, your family made the decision to shift into the country. And you are really in the country where you are. How's that? And you've heard us share some of the challenges that our children have faced. How is it from a young person's perspective? And just those of you who don't know, Shanna and her family shifted onto a property at Marlow American near Rollins Plains, just over the hill from us. And there were some tracks to get into most of the property is bush. There were some four-wheel drive tracks to get in. Across a couple of creeks, it's when it rains, they stay at home.
Or they stay out.
Or they stay out if they're on the wrong side of the creek. How many creek crossings have you got? I'm trying to count. The river, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven or eight creeks. Including the river.
The ones that don't normally flood.
Yeah, okay. Five that normally flood. Okay, so... But when they shifted there was a concrete slab where someone, a previous owner, had intended to build a house. And that was pretty well it. And so Shanna and her siblings have gone through the experience of contributing to building a house. And it didn't take 8 years. But it's still going. You know, and this is another warning for those of you that are thinking of shifting to the country. How can I say this? Without prejudice, condemning myself or something. That's the challenge, that if you think that the house is close enough to being finished, we'll shift in now, just recognise it'll probably never get finished, because once you shift in, there are other priorities that come up in your life. And those in our house, we don't have floor coverings, we don't have skirting boards. We, you know, there's all sorts of things that aren't finished. And that's probably how it'll... But that's probably how it'll stay for a little while. But Sharon...
not giving up hope.
Are you willing... You're happy to share your experience, your perspective as a young person?
So I guess where to start was we were living near Tari at the time. This is... For a long time, Mum had been reading lots of books and she's like, we have to move to the country. This is what Ellen White says. This is what the Bible says. You know, this is just what we're called to do. Watching lots of... I don't know if you know, back to... some family in America has a ministry talking about moving to the country, country living, university or something. I don't know what that one is. Dave Westbrook, yeah. So she's watching all this stuff and she's, like, getting all of us kids pumped up about this and we're like, yeah, this sounds good. We've lived in town, like, our whole lives and imagine having freedom to live on a property and run around and do all those fun things. So we all got pretty excited and the first step was we had to sell our house and we'd been working in that house for maybe 5 years, it was like an empty shell upstairs and we just like had to build it. So we'd just keep building houses sort of thing. But Mum's like, finally we have to move to the country. We're trying, you know, we just need to get out. And so we prayed that we would be able to sell our house somehow and it was like a total miracle how that happened and it happened really quickly and not what was happening in the area at the time. So we knew it was God leading. And I remember very clearly as we were like moving out, we were going to move up to Warhope just to live in Warhope for a little bit to see, you know, where God led next and what country property, like live in the area before you move out to the property. So we did that and I remember Dad saying clearly to me, he's like, so you're excited about it, but, you know, it's possible we might actually have to live in a tent and we might have to like really rough it. And are you still just as excited? I'm like, yeah, let's do this. This is cool. So like all of us kids went out like, this is awesome, you know, this is something new, something exciting. And it was new and exciting. And when we finally found the property, and like it's a whole miracle how that happened as well, we had to go out there and work with lots of leeches and lots of ticks and lots of snakes and lots of animals like that. It was very overgrown property that we had to clear first. And yeah, I remember my little sister, she would like cry every time we were going to go out to the property to work on it because there's leeches and they're going to get me and I don't want to go this time. So yeah, that's sort of what we had to go through. But like for me, I loved it and it was hard work, but we needed hard work and God taught us through that. So yeah, I mean, there's so many challenges and so many experiences I could share. But yeah, overall, from my perspective, I'm so grateful for it and I'm pretty sure the rest of my siblings are so grateful for it as well. Yeah.
So Shanna's dad is a plumber, so she can do plumbing, but just think of all the other experiences and skills that Shanna and her siblings have had as they've built a house. When we were building our house, Shanna's mum used to bring Shanna and her siblings over and they did our gyprocking. You know, all of the kids were involved, you know. The skills, the practical skills that our young people can learn. But Shanna, did you ever live in a tent? Did you get to the point where you lived in a tent?
Not quite. I remember staying in a tent on the slab when we first moved out there just to get ready to work early in the morning. But never lived there as such. We still had our rental in town where we went to and from. We moved in when the house was just at lock-up stage, so we had windows in, we had a little bit of... walls on most of the house, not all of the house, and we had a roof over our head, but we didn't have ridge capping, so water still got in. Yeah, and that was just, we moved in just before it flooded a lot and the whole house got very wet and all our stuff. But yeah, it was still really good and really challenging.
You're smiling about it, laughing about it, but that's what Desley was saying. After a little while, it doesn't seem so bad.
When I heard rain after that first experience of being there and like being totally wet and totally not being able to get out and isolated and everything, I would like almost cry every time it rained because I'm like, is it going to happen again? So it was hard going through it.
My experience started off with a tent. When I was 12, my parents bought a country property and 40 acres. Wish they still lived there. Yeah, and we had a little family tent that acted as our kitchen, my mum's kitchen, and we ate underneath the peppermint trees, and I lived in my bedroom was a two-man tent. Yeah, and we lived in that for, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 months until my dad managed to build a slab hut that we lived in. Yeah. I don't mind tents. What do you think about tents, Justin?
I was just thinking that as providers of the family, we can beat ourselves up a little bit about how perhaps our family is living. And I was just thinking before, you were living in a shed and we're living in a shed. And I was thinking of the patriarchs of old that lived in tents. And you think of the wealth that Abraham had. And that's what he chose. They lived in tent. I mean, extremely wealthy people. I think it's right to long for a better place. I think that's something God puts in us. But we must realize that better place is heaven and then the new earth. So I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting something a bit better, as long as it's in line with God's will. And, you know, living in a shed is better than living under a tree. Living under a tree is better than living out in the open. And living out in the open is better than not living at all. So it's all relative. But it'd be nice to live in a proper home.
Desley. I listened to a market gardening podcast called Farmer to Farmer. And if you're interested in farming, agriculture, growing vegetables, I really encourage you to listen to it. But one of the questions that the presenter asks everyone that comes on is, what is your favourite tool on the farm? Okay, what is your favourite tool on the farm? And so I'd like to do that. I'm going to start with Desley and ask a few people, so that those who are thinking about making the transition, put a mental note. I might need one of those, okay? And it'll depend on circumstances. So, Desley, what's your favourite tool on the farm or in your homesteading or however you like to put it? What has been in the past was really significant to you?
My large solar system. That would have to be my favourite, is knowing that we're completely off the grid, so we have no state electricity. We have panels on our roof and batteries. That would have to be my favourite. After living without power and after living with just a generator, having a solar system and knowing that I have electricity and I have the convenience of cooking, vacuuming, ironing, whatever, almost whenever I want, that would be my absolute favourite. Not quite what you're thinking of?
No, you're being truthful. You know, it just reminds me of, you know, the counsel husbands are given about providing every convenience for their wives so that they're not spending all their life slaving over, you know, those mechanical things that need to be done for the family, cooking and the cleaning and things like that. So, no, I get that. How about you, Justin?
What you just said, that's a work in progress, bro. Well, I know what Yvette says, so I'm going to pass it to her first. Okay. There's a reason for that.
My most important thing would be my wood cook stove, because it not only cooks our food, but it heats our water, heats the home. So it's most important to do all those things, because I like a hot shower.
And I don't want to preempt, but I think I know what your favourite tool is now.
Well, actually, it should be the other way around. My favourite tool should be the wood cook stove, and Yvette should be the chainsaw.
That's true.
So I wore out one very good chainsaw. I'm on to my second. Got a bigger one. Hopefully it can last longer. And I was telling some people before, I don't know whether I should have my chainsaw surgically removed from my hand, because I'm hanging on to it so much. or whether I should have it attached.
Yes.
But when you're living somewhere where it gets down to about -7, -8 in the evenings in winter, and you're living in a shed that's uninsulated, you can go through the wood. I'm talking about an 8-foot by 6-foot tray on my ute, stacked high in 2 weeks. No one can burn wood like my wife. Thankfully, we've got 100 acres of trees and a lot of them on the ground. But it comes with challenges. Like, it's a very wet area. And I've got trees that I know that have been on the ground for 10 years. And I cut them and they're still green. It just doesn't dry out there. Whereas at a previous location, I could cut a green tree, just cut it in logs, and just before I went to use it, I would split it and it'd be dry. I have to split wood and wait 5 or 6 years before I can use it, like when it's really, you know, really nicely seasoned. So I have a huge stack of wood, like years and years and years worth. But it's not all usable now. I say to a vet, do you have to burn so much? So I go inside the house and I'm always turning down the, you know, the vent, you know? Like, there's nothing in the oven. There's nothing on top of the stove. It's not that. And you've got windows open. I'm thinking, for crying out loud, like, you're killing me, you know? But, and when my boy leaves home, it's going to be harder. Now, he doesn't use a chainsaw yet. He wants to, but I don't kind of let him yet. But he's been splitting wood from the age of 4. And he's really good. And he likes it. And it's 8 naturals, you know. I mean, you're outside, you're getting exercise, it makes him thirsty and hungry, and he's as strong as an ox, you know. He's built like me, and he's beating me in arm wrestles now. Well, he's not quite my size yet, but he's my height. But so it is helpful. It's going to be more of a challenge when it's just the two of us, I think. But the chainsaw, I can't say I love it, but it's the tool I use the most, and it's a necessity. It's a necessity.
You know, children leaving home is going to be a challenge for us. You know, how
are
you going
to... Maybe we could adopt. Maybe we could adopt some.
Good plan. How can you do without Josiah to split your wood? And how can I do without Hannah and Ella to pick my beans? I went home this morning to pick my beans. It took me hours. They're just so fast. I just really appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Jeffrey, would you be willing to share with us where you're shifting to in 2 weeks with your family and maybe a couple of reasons why you chose that location?
Thanks, Rod. So currently we live in Brisbane. We are moving to Tyalgum in North New South Wales. So it's a long story, but I think we believe that God is really calling us to move from the city. I'm a city family. We are a city boy from Jakarta, Singapore, Malaysia, and Brisbane. It's totally new, but we just move out of faith. To answer your questions, how... we actually, because we are new in Australia, so we said, God, we don't know where to go. Where do you want us to move? And we keep on reading the Bible and fasting almost every Sabbath on where God wants us to move, whether going back to Indonesia or in Australia. So almost 2 months, every Sunday, almost every night, we are looking into property to sell. So we've been up to Gympie, North, been to Maleni, we've been to Toowoomba and Buna and Kyogle. And actually the first place that we visited is Tyalgum. And that's the last place that we finally found the property is in Tyalgum. So the last 2 months is, I think God is leading us into the right place, where we believe that's the place that he wants us to be.
Can you describe how large it is?
The property is 14 acres. 14 acres. There is a cottage, two bedroom house with a big shed. So one of the criteria that I'm looking for at that time is hopefully there is a fruit trees. And there are 40 fruit trees. And the good thing about that property is, after we find more about the property, is there are chook place already prepared, garden bed already ready to plant, actually two chook place. And there are small dam that's already there. And we found out that the water never runs dry. In the last 6 months, there was no rain around here, and the water is still there. So, yeah, we're blessed with the gift.
And are you going to continue in your current employment when you shift down there? Yeah?
So that's the third. So this year is a big milestone, actually, for our family. We sold the house. We want to live in a simple life. I've been living almost 10 years as an expatriate in different countries. So we get a lot of luxury life. We get a good pay. So I work in oil and gas company as a senior in finance. But when we pray, we led to the country life. But also during that period, we said, God, what do you want us to do after we move to the country life? So to make the story short, I left the job after 20 years of working in this company, and all of the people in the company said that, what did you do? Are you doing the right things? And even the family also asking, why do you have to leave such a good job and then to leave somewhere that you don't know? But I think, yeah, he will. He knows where we are going to do next.
And Justin, you live a long way from the city. What's your circumstance with work?
Yeah, you did have to raise that, didn't you? Well, the idea when we moved was I would continue working in Sydney. I work as a gardener in Sydney's North Shore. For 2 years, we would do that. And in that time, we would have bought country property, and we would have been able to work out our budget. Like, for example, did the house need some improvements done? And work out that budget and then find work locally. I work 1 week on, 1 week off, and I earn more money on that 1 week on in Sydney than I would working full-time down home. But obviously the idea is to be home so I can come home every night. I miss not coming home every night. You know, I'm away Sunday afternoon through to Friday evening, and then I get the next week off.
How far are you from Sydney?
I'm only 520 kilometres. It's a 6-hour drive. Leaving Sydney on a Friday afternoon, it can get to a 7.5-hour drive just trying to get out. I'm not the only person who wants to drive out of Sydney on a Friday afternoon, and the traffic is horrendous. So that's a big challenge for me. It's a big challenge for Yvette. And when I'm in Sydney, I'm in a house. And Yvette's back home in a shed. And when I'm in Sydney, I disconnect. How I cope is I disconnect from the family somewhat, and I disconnect from the building the house. I hate having to come to Sydney and work, and I have to ring the chippy, or I have to ring the sparky. I do it, but I hate trying to do it all the time at home. And then when I'm in Sydney, it's just work. So I work 7 a.m. till dark. So this time of year, I'm working 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. I just don't have the energy. And I get a little bit depressed as well. You know, so it's challenging. But I do see my children, More often now than when I used to have to commute an hour from where we used to live into work. So I used to have to sometimes commute like 2 hours into the eastern suburbs of Sydney, so I had to scrap those clients and then move them a bit closer. But I actually, they see more of me now than before. It's just, you know, going home and you sort of... going home to, when I'm in Sydney, going to that home, which I just rent a room, and eating by yourself at night. You know, you've got your phone, and you're, you know, reading the Bible or you're reading the news while you're eating. There's no one to talk to, and so now and working by myself and for myself, and like I don't even see customers half the time. They're big properties, they're busy people, so I just invoice them through, you know, through email, and they just direct deposit my money. So I can go a week not even talking to anyone except the odd phone call to Yvette. Now, I hate talking on phones.
You do?
I do. And my wife wants to talk to me, and I ring her, say, oh, don't forget to water the tomatoes, and don't forget to do this, don't forget to do that. And she wants a bit more of a in-depth, more lovey-dovey sort of conversation that wives want.
And you indulge it, don't you?
And I don't. So I come home, you know, looking for a cuddle, and I'm lucky to get a sleep in the same bed as her, you know. So I've got to take a couple of days to sort of smooth the waters. So that's a challenge more for Yvette, I suppose. And she has to become the head of the house. She's a spiritual leader. She's got to lead out in the morning worship, evening worship, and it's not her role. And all I have to do is worry about me. Then I come home, then I have to sort of fit in. And our family timetable changes. I come home, so I'm kind of on holidays now. I mean, I work 7 till dark. I'm tired. I don't come good until about Tuesday. And then I've got the 6-hour travel both ways, and I try and sleep along the way, but it's a little dangerous. Like, I have micro sleeps, you know. It's a little dangerous for me and my fellow commuters. No, I'm serious. I can sleep about 10 times on the way home, but I wake up quick. No, I'm serious. And before I had a dual cab ute, I could pull over and have a sleep and put the seat right back. Well, that got uncomfortable, I could jump in the back. Now I've got a single cab ute. The seat doesn't go in your back. You try sleeping like this, with your head against the window. Sometimes I've slept with my head like that on the centre console. But you only sleep for... But other times I just try once when I go home. And that's my battle is micro sleeps. And it worries Yvette. I have church members praying for me because I've told them. They said, you're joking, aren't you? I said, no, I've probably had 300, 400 micro-sleeps going back the last 10 years. I said, yeah, you're a madman. But yeah, so it's not a perfect world, man. We're just doing the best we can, you know.
I wanted to ask you that question because of what we said before, and that is that...
Give that here to me for a minute. You realise that was an embarrassing question for me. Did I tell to you, Mark, about that in the... I did. No, it's embarrassing. You know, it really is, because it's not... I'm teaching country living, and I'm in the country 3/4 of the time, and 1/4 of the time I'm in Sydney. But the kids are experiencing country living. They call me a city slicker too, by the way, you know.
I think they might be right. Now, why I asked you that question was because I think it perfectly illustrates that we need to know that God is leading us. Family, church members, the devil, they're all telling you you're mad. And there's probably some grounds for them saying that in that context, but we need to know, and that's, I don't know what keeps you going, but I think that's a powerful thing that keeps you going. You know you're doing right in spite of the struggles and in spite of how difficult it is.
God can work through people who who make mistakes. I'm going to long to have an interview with Jesus while I wait in line for the millions of other people who want to get there before me, and ask him the question, you know, where did we go wrong? Did we go wrong? And like the Israelites, they wanted a king. And Jesus said, you're not going to have a king, but we want a king. You know, you're not to have a king, but we want a king. All right, have the king and reap the consequences. So I kind of wonder, you know, you said you got to know the Lord's leading. Well, it's not like we moved to the from the country to the city and we know from council that's the wrong thing. So you're going to beat yourself up about it, aren't you? It's not working out. And but you know, I'm sure we've made mistakes, you know. But God will work, you work through that and bring us back around in the end. So we're just looking forward to the next installment. Got to finish the house. Should have it. Country living, I tell you, it's hard to get tradesmen, and forget getting a good one because you can't get them. In a small town, they are rough as guts, and I'm a perfectionist. And expensive. And we've been waiting 3 months for a guy to do some work for us so we can go on to the next stage. It's holding everything up. But we could have it finished by March, but I'm not sure. And then from there, then I like to have set little goals. Like people say, "Oh, how do you build a house?" Like I had no idea how to build a house. I never wanted to build a house. I've never been someone who did anything in tradesmen in regards to building a house. But I just say it's like eating a horse. It's just one mouthful at a time, and you just look at the next mouthful, and eventually you'll consume the horse. I'm not advocating horse eating, okay? But how do you build a house? You clear the land. You know, you have your soil testing done. You dig your footings. And it's just one step. So that's our next step. And then once that's done, then and that's all I've done. And so with work, I'm thinking, no, just finish the house. And then we'll go from there. What do you want us to do? You know, in regards to my work, in regards to our budget, do I find local work? Or we're praying about actually trying to start a business together. We want to do some work that's together. And Yvette's come up with something, and I said, no way. And don't ask me what it was, please.
No promises.
Okay, I'll say it then. I'm a gardener, right? And if you're going to be in... See, horticulture and agriculture is not a high-paying job, right? So if you're going to be a gardener, you got to work for wealthy people, do the perfect job, something with a lot of skill level, and charge a lot of money. Now... So gardening is probably, horticulture is probably one of the lowest paid jobs, along with cleaners. So my wife said, why don't we work locally, and I can do the gardening, and she could do the cleaning, or she works with me with the gardening, and I help with the cleaning. And we're talking about as we're driving, and this beaten up old van drives past with something cleaning services. And I said, do you want to be driving something like that? That's about to break down. The wheel's about to fall off that. Okay, man. I said, you chose it like the two most lowest paid jobs. I don't know if I really want to do that. And gardening, right, we're outside of a town called Tumbarumba, right? It's freezing cold and really wet in winter. Nothing grows. Nothing grows until about October, and it stops about December because it's so dry. Nothing grows. So you're going to be gardening October, November, December. And cleaning their houses. Half the houses in the place are sort of falling down anyway. Like, I mean, it's not going to be... I'm not after a lucrative career, but I don't want to be working my guts out for nothing either. So we're trying to find something a little bit more worthwhile, perhaps. I'm not that desperate yet.
I really like Yvette's train of thought, though. You know, something local, something together. using our skills that we've developed over lifetimes. You know, that just makes complete sense. But that's all right. We need to look at things critically and weigh them up, do our due diligence. So I'm glad you've done that. Yeah. Can I make a big jump now from Tumbarumba to somewhere even colder? Jana, you grew up in rural Germany and you now live in suburban Australia. And I know there's been a few twists and turns in that journey, but could you maybe just share with us why, before we started this conversation, you felt that you are languishing at the moment in suburban Brisbane?
I guess both my husband and I, growing up in a rural area, loving it, having wonderful childhood memories. And yes, we had tough times as well, but it's as we discussed this morning, the blessings are bigger than the challenges. And we've been working in Austrian and Health Institute prior to getting married, and we got married there. And when we decided, well, we'll settle down in Australia, we moved back to Brisbane, where Ben used to do his traineeship as a carpenter. And first of all, we went straight back into the middle of Brisbane, and after 2 weeks I'm like, sorry honey, but I can't do it. I open the tap and I can smell the chlorine. I open the window, I hear the cars buzzing by. I've got to make sure no one's breaking into the house. So we are, yeah, more on the outskirts now. But we definitely do feel that we're not designed or created for that kind of lifestyle. And we notice every time we drive further out, this is where we're meant to be. This is how God created us, to be surrounded by nature. And we can tell how that comfy, cozy, and yeah, so to speak, lifestyle in the city, it's creeping in, and we don't want that. We really don't. And we know it's not where we're meant to be, but we've got to make the most of where we are right now. We've got a little garden and background that does give us that bit of a taste of what it's supposed to be like. We have tried several times moving out into the country, had serious looks at properties. But so far, every time we prayed seriously about it, God's very, clearly shut the doors on us so far. At times, it's frustrated us, but we know that we've got a place where God wants us to do his work right now. We've got to do it faithfully until he shows us the next step. And I'm very encouraged by hearing now how everyone sharing their story, to see God's leading. Because sometimes I wonder, are we making it too complicated that we pray too much about this stress, not stressing, but trying to take all things into consideration instead of just seizing an opportunity that might arise, rather than waiting and praying and listening to God, what God has to tell. But listening to what you've been sharing now actually encourages me to just keep trusting that God knows that he is in control, and when the time is right, he will open the way, because I know that's his plan. So, one day.
Jessica, you've lived in the country, as you describe, as long as you can remember. Can you just describe where you live and what it's like for a young person to live in the bush, well, in the country, from your perspective?
So, our closest town is only 16 k's away, but it's not really a town. It has a pub and a post office, and not much else operational. So, we've lived there 16 years, so that's what I remember the most, like the place we've lived the most. And I guess for me, because that's all I know, it's just normal to me. So, like, for example, earlier when people were saying about having to plan ahead for the shopping and that, I have no concept of ducking down to the shop. So it's just like, that's so normal to me. And it's just like, oh, I need something. Oh, well, that will just have to wait till next week, you know, when we're in town. But, yeah, I really appreciate the just the slowness of life. Like now I go into Canberra, it's our closest city, one day a fortnight, and it's just every time I get home from that, it's just like so refreshing because it's not noisy. There's just might be an occasional car go down the road, but you know, it's not busy, it's quiet, or there's only like nature sounds. And also I really like that it's much more private. I'm not used to being in town where your neighbours hear everything. So I really appreciate that as well, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
I appreciate you talking about the sounds, the different sounds, city to country. Life in the city, have mercy. I can only imagine what life in Singapore is like. The people concentrated, you know, hundreds of people living in the same building, to the point so congested or so many people in one place that very few people own their own vehicles. Is it still that case? Yeah. I remember a friend that shifted from Singapore to Australia a while ago told me that you had to actually have permission from the government to own a vehicle, to own a car. Whereas in Australia, I mean, if you haven't got three or four, you know, you're really poor. And we've got to travel long distances. You know, it's nothing when you live in the country to hop in the car and drive 5 or 6 hours. You know, if you drive 5 or 6 hours in Singapore, you're the other end of Malaysia, I guess, if you could get across the strait. But the noise, you know, when I first met Desley...
she was very noisy.
In a very sweet way.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. She was very uncomfortable with silence. Yeah. Okay, and go and visit her in her house in Goulburn, for argument's sake, where she was a teacher, and... she'd walk into the house and turn the radio on. And it would be on until she either went to sleep or she went back out and she'd turn it off again. And that just drove me crazy because, like Jessica, I was used to the sounds of nature and silence was just normal, except for a magpie or a kookaburra in the background. So, Des, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'm not sure what there is to talk about, really. I don't know why I was like that. I was the youngest of a family of five, and we were not a quiet family, so maybe I just needed that noise to make me feel at home. I was living by myself. It was probably just my company, the habit that I get into. You know, you kind of just get into the habit of having something. I think I'm still the same, because the other morning I woke up here, and it was 4 o'clock, and I just listened, and I couldn't hear any chooks. I couldn't hear, you know, the noises of our property. I couldn't hear them, and I was like, wow, it's too quiet. And I needed the sounds of our property. And Jeffrey, I was very pleased to hear you call them chooks. Very Australian. Yes, I think it's just what you get used to.
It is, but... I think because of how God created us, most people pretty quickly get used to the sounds of nature. I think somehow we're hankering for it. And even though we're used... I remember, I guess this is kind of off traffic, I went to stay with my sister once at Green Point on the Brisbane water, you know, on the central coast there. And she lived up above the water, and I was there on a Friday night, and I just listened to sirens all night. Police and ambulance, and I guess the water was the sound was coming across the water from multiple, and I just thought, man, this is terrible. But one thing that I'm conscious of, it's become really apparent to me as I've witnessed people making the transition from the city to the country, and that is that we often take the city with us. And so we seem to have this sort of an ideal of a lifestyle, and that varies from person to person, but often there are elements of city life that we can't do without, that we need to take with us.
It's one thing to get the man out of the city, it's another thing to get the city out of the man. And with me, it's 1 week on, 1 week off. The country, as busy as we are, it's a slower pace. It's more calming influence. But there's times, I'll give you an example. Yvette and I, like, we go into town once a week. And so we do multiple things. One trip was go to the tip. And so there was, at the tip, a guy stops you and gives you, you know, if it's only recycling, but it's free, but he has to give you a receipt. But he doesn't always give you a receipt. Sometimes he waves you on. So I'm pulling up, and there's a different guy on, and he's having a chin wag to the car in front. Now, all I want to do is drop off two bags of recycling, and I want to get going, I want to do this, and I want to get back home. So I got the city in me going, I'll go this, bang, bang, bang. In the country, it's like, what's your hurry, man, you know? And so I'm waiting, and this car's not, the guy working there sees me there, and he just keeps talking. So I look at him there, and so I drive up next to him, put the window down, and say, mate, I just want to get rid of this recycling. You mind if I just go over there? He goes, no, I've got to give you a receipt. And as we're driving, I thought that was not unreasonable of me. That bloke, I'm his customer, and he's letting me wait. And there's nothing wrong with what I did. So I'm driving, and the vet chastises me and says, that was very rude. So it's like the city, it's a rush. And sometimes I might overtake someone because you can be driving from our place into town, it's like 100 kilometres country road. 100 kilometres an hour. It's 23 kilometres away. It's 100 kilometres an hour speed limit. There's only a few places you can pass. But sometimes some old cocky will pull up, got his big hat on in his cruiser, ute or something. A Kelpie on the back, thank you, yeah, or two. And he sees me coming and he still pulls out. And I'm doing 100 and he's doing 40. And it's his road. So I just sort of put the foot down and go around him and say to people in the car, hey, don't you know I'm from the city? Don't slow me up. So it definitely is a challenge to get the city out of the person. And I think one thing we need to highlight, and I have shared this in another forum, but I think it's worth saying again, with modern technology, you can be at the back of absolutely nowhere. If you've got a satellite dish, you can have the worst of anything in front of your eyes. It doesn't matter if the nearest neighbour is 1,000 kilometres away, you got just vileness right there. And if you've got children doing distant education through internet, you've got to police what they're onto, because it doesn't take many key words to get onto rubbish and the evilness of it. So you can be living in the country and have the city in the home. City here, but city literally in the home as well.
Yeah, key point. This really, and this touches every aspect of our lives. I was thinking about statistics in Australia of mental health, and I was really shocked, you know, because I've got this idea how good living in the country is for the mind and how we think, and we know it is, but when you look at the statistics, there's not much difference, and we actually have more people committing suicide in the country than we do in the city.
Are you aware that Ellen White tells us to get out of the cities because of the suicide rate in the city in her day? Now we have the suicide rate multiple times higher in the country.
Yeah. And I believe there's all sorts of factors that lead into that, but I go beyond mental health to physical health as well. We can be, like you say, we can be in the country thinking like a city person. We can be farming. We can be involved in agriculture. And we're in an air-conditioned tractor. The GPS is basically driving it. And we're sitting watching the TV in the tractor. We do next to no physical labour. we're in air conditioning as we go around our paddocks.
But you know, Rod, it can be even worse than that. You can be on an old Matthew Ferguson and it's not even the ROPS over you or anything and have the city in your head, because farming is a business. It's a business. And what drives the city is money. And if you're not making money, you're not in business. So you can be farming and forefront of your mind is making money. Well, that's city. You need to eat. You need to earn the money. But is that the driving force?
Yeah, gardening and cleaning. All right. I think it's time we give opportunity for some questions. Has anyone got any questions? Justin, you've got a question?
No. I just want to comment on Desley's very rude remark about me. Some of us have our battles. All right, that's what I just want to say. We have our battles. As a gardener, I could have chosen a lot of other things, but I like the outdoors. I'd like to be left alone. And I don't need a lot of money, but I'll be frank, I don't like being poor. I'm not poor, but I don't want to be any poorer than I am. I mean, we struggle, but Yvette's very good at budgeting, and our needs are met. You know, we give the Lord His 10%, His offerings, often give more offerings than we think we can afford, but we can always pay our bills. But I do have my struggles in I don't want my wage to get any lower than it already is. I went to the bank for a little bit of a loan, and he basically laughed me out of his office. He said, "Mate, you're on the breadline." He said, "I know you work for yourself and you write off a lot of equipment and gear, so my turnover is a lot higher than what I show." But, yeah, he ridicules me about how poor I was. He's thinking, "Why are you doing in here wanting money? You're too poor." Yeah, I know. I wanted to borrow $80,000, and if I had $80,000 in shares or something, I could have borrowed the money. I said, if I had $80,000 in shares, I would have sold the shares and I wouldn't be coming to you. But that's how the city works. So, yeah, I have my struggles with the money thing. I don't want to be a gardener in Tumbarumba or a cleaner. No disrespect for cleaners or gardeners, I'm one.
Do we have any questions ready to go?
Just with this whole country living thing and everything, like, obviously I believe it's the right thing because I've done it myself as well, but how would you answer a question, like, we're meant to be, you know, especially in the end times, you know, reaching out to people, saving the lost, seeking the lost. I guess that's, yeah, how do we do that when we're secluding ourselves on our country properties and doing our own thing and just trying to struggle with the how to survive, how to earn money, all that sort of stuff? How can we focus on other people as well?
We're told to go to the byways and the highways. There's still 1,200 people living around me that need the Lord, you know, about the Lord. There's a difference between country living, maybe even wilderness living, and being a monk or being a hermit. We're not called to do that. Firstly, the mission field is our families, and then it just spreads to our next door neighbours and so forth. Country living doesn't mean you've got to be, you know, hundreds of kilometres away from a big city. Ellen White often talks about just outside the cities. And the only thing our church should own in the city is church. The only thing our church should own is churches in the city. And we should drive into the city on Sabbath and have our churches. Well, you can't. I can't do that to Sydney. You can't do that to Sydney or Brisbane. So some people may just be just out on 5 acres or something. You can buy, you know, private small property like that and still grow all your own food. Does that answer the question? I have a question if that question was answered. But
there's another aspect of that. I'm just thinking of a quote. The cities are to be worked, but not by us living in them. I think I'm pretty well verbatim there, but we'd live in the country and then do missionary tours back into the city. I believe that's the ideal situation.
You've got to allow God to call you, where, tell you where you are to go, and he opens and shuts doors. We didn't want to be where we are, but God shut doors and directed us to where we are now. There's plenty of people outside of Sydney who can work Sydney and Brisbane and so forth, but you guys are like a war hope. I mean, you still got a mission field.
Yeah, and I think that brings up a really important point as well. We need to all individually rely on God for our guidance, and he doesn't ask any two people or two families to do the same thing, I don't believe. And it'll be different times for different people. I think the challenge for us is to be open to his leading. Okay, and lay our lives, lay our homes, lay our families on the altar and just say, Lord, direct me, you know. Tell me when it's time, you know, by your counsel, by your providences, by the Holy Spirit, explain to me when it's time to go. And meanwhile, wherever we are, we can be missionaries and we can be active in our communities, sharing our faith, being loving and lovable Christians, whatever God calls us to be in there. And I just want to share that because the council is clear, you know, out of the cities, you know, time and time again, she says, out of the cities, get out of the cities into the villages and then into the country, etc., etc. But we need to be really careful that we're not pushing people, you know. Share the information, share our experience, but we need to leave each family's experience between them and the Lord. So no pressure. So you have a question, Justin?
I just wanted to add to what you just said. Yeah, in I'm not sure where the quote was from. It's in Country Living, and she says that. Not to push people, but let the Lord lead. She talks about not doing it. The word haste, Yvette? Haste. But then she says, don't be like Lot as well. Don't loiter, she says. Don't loiter. So there's somewhere between rushing and not doing anything is where they're supposed to be, where we're all supposed to be. My question was to the young people, Jessica and Shanna, in regards to work. I'm not sure how to word it, Rod. In the country, there's less work. It provides opportunities to maybe have your own business, work for yourself, which is absolute ideal, particularly when our rights and privileges are slowly eroding, and let alone, you know, the Sunday laws. But there's less opportunity for that. And I was just wondering how the young people felt about there's less opportunity. Growing up in the country, less opportunity for higher education. I mean, you've got to, I mean, like, for example, Jessica would have to go to Canberra maybe to uni. That would be the closest place. And the struggles with that, or less opportunities for work.
It's a really good question, because in Australia, and I think probably most Western nations, the migration of the young people is from the country to the city. You know, they get to 16 and 70 years old and they're off, either to uni or to work, looking for those opportunities you're talking about. Any thoughts, ladies?
Well, I guess the really good thing about this day and age is that there's a lot of distance education. So for me, I'm studying. I do it all from home. I have practical stuff. I do it through a video call kind of thing. So, yeah, there's lots of opportunities. It's not like study is off limits. Still definitely possible. And the other thing about working is, I guess I just share the story of my brother, because early last year he decided he needed regular work, and so he just made a flyer and said, this is his name, contact details, interested in doing like farmhand type work, yard work, lawn mowing, just made himself available. And through that, he's basically got full-time work. He started off, he works on a farm down the road, so doing farm work, sheep work, fencing, all that kind of stuff. and that's regular. And then through that contact, another guy who came and worked there, then he started working for him as well. So that's also local. That's like gardening, landscaping work. And yeah, he's just, then, you know, that guy's brother also has a farm, so he goes over to help him with shearing, other work, landmarking, everything. So it's just like he just took that one step of initiative, and God provided all these opportunities just through word of mouth, I guess. And that's the other thing about living in the country. It's much more community-based. So if you work for someone, you do a good job, they're going to tell their neighbours. Everyone's going to know. Like, sometimes it's not such a good thing, but yeah. And so through that, I think you almost have more opportunities than in the city, because there's not that kind of community, that community thing. And yeah, I think also the other thing comes back to faith. It was actually really amazing. Every time Luke was feeling like, oh, I need some more work, he'd pray about it. And he'd just get a call from someone, you know, I found your flyer, or I heard about you from so-and-so, can you do this for me? And even Mum was praying for him, like, particularly one time, and yep, he gets another call. And it's just, like, so repeated, and I think that's what it comes down to. We just have to know that we're doing what God wants us to do, and he'll provide those needs for us.
But the other aspect of that with Luke is that he's been doing a man's work for a long time. So even as though he's a young man, he's got all those practical skills, you know, and so he is useful to those people that he's working. You know, he's not a skinny little wimpy kid that doesn't know up from down, because he's had that practical education.
Yeah, the meeting just before lunch, we were just talking about that actually, entrepreneurs and how that all works. And it is hard to find work, and over the last year, the times I've been at home because I go away a lot, I've been praying for work and looking for work and applying for work and not getting any work. And I believe that God leads in that as well, because I guess I just wanted a normal job and just do something normal. But God's brought other things to me instead. Like, I've been able to do some busking in town and get a little bit from that. I've been able to have a few violin students. People actually come and ask me, can you teach me, instead of me looking out for people. Like, I could easily put flyers out and get more students, but I've been asked by people in the community to do it, and I haven't got around to it. I was too busy for it. Like, there are opportunities that come up. It's not going to be the conventional way, though. And that's good, because if you're thinking outside the box and, oh, what can I do? Like, even my sister, she has bees. She makes money with her honey, with her wax, with almost everything she touches, she turns to money. My brother's the same. He has a firewood business. He sells firewood to random people. People, dad's work, he puts flyers up and they just buy trailloads of wood. Like, hours, like at least an hour north and south of us, people are buying wood from us, and dad just drops it off on his way to work or his way home from work. And like, God does open the doors to find work, yeah, and study, like distance education. I'm doing the same course as Jess, but yeah, it is really a faith thing. And I've been like, I just want a normal job, I don't want to have to go around this doing this outside the box thing. But no, it's been really beneficial, and God's really blessed, even though it's not, I guess, what some people might want.
Okay, any more questions?
Thank you. Maybe a question for the parents and even the young adults. Socializing wise, being in the country, homeschooling and so forth, do you all live close to each other? Do you have other like-minded families in the area, or a church that's really buzzing or active? Or how do you find the right balance there? Or do the kids feel like, my family is my social life and I was super content and happy with that? Because I often get that question, oh, you're sure you want to move out into the country and you want to do homeschooling? Your poor girls, what are they going to, what kind of life are they going to have? So I thought it might be a good idea to ask someone who's got first-hand experience.
Just a quote, I think the one that we heard, I don't know what meeting it was, one of the meetings earlier on, one of the main meetings, talking about children having a simple, quiet life. And we moved into an area where there's lots of Adventist families, and it's really great. We enjoy having them around, but Mum has also been very careful of, we need our own family time. We can't just be socialising with people all the time. She enjoys it when we can spend a whole week at home and just do our schoolwork, do our normal daily life and not have to be distracted by everything else happening. And yeah, it is good. Sometimes it's really helpful to have that social support as well. But I guess in our family, we've really appreciated being able to have that family time as well. So we have sort of a mix of both. But especially when I was younger, it was a lot more without people. Now my younger siblings have a lot more people at the same age that I was when without as many people. So yeah, I guess how God leads and that is different as well for every person. But yeah, just quiet, simple life is good. So it's not going to be a negative thing.
I think if you want to raise your kids in the Lord and do the homeschooling stuff, it's a lot better if you are in the country, because like well, Lightning Ridge is out back, but the population's still around 7,000 people, and I was at one point the only child being homeschooled, so I was really isolated in a big amount of people. So it was just me and then everybody else. Where if you're in the country, at least there's not all these other people doing something completely different. And so when I became a teenager, I went back to high school in grade 10, and then I just dove back into the world, and it was a long journey to find myself back. Yeah. So I think that sometimes a bit of isolation away from adversary is really good. Yeah.
And that's definitely what saved me as well.
So I find that really interesting what you said, Rena. You felt isolated in a large group of people because you were doing something different. Yeah, I can relate to that. That'd be really hard for you as a young person. Yeah. So there you go. Isolation can be a real blessing, but it can also be a challenge, can't it? Yeah.
Children go through different stages. The ideal scenario for the young children is to have isolation. They don't need anyone else. Their mum and their dad are their world, and that's how it's meant to be. All too soon in society, our children are weaned from their parents and from the influence of family by school. Because once a child goes to school, the parent is no longer the major influence in their life. And we lose a lot of ground in that way. But I've found with my children, I have six, so they're over-socialized with each other alone. And every child is so different. I have one that is a homebody. She doesn't want to go anywhere. In fact, at this camp, you'll have rarely seen her because she'll be sitting in our cabin doing her schoolwork. She's very happy to be alone. And when she's not alone, she'll have one friend that she'll hang out with. I have another that is so gregarious and outgoing that she just cannot be kept quiet. She thrives on people and talking. And we as parents, I think, need to be aware of our children's needs. I have another child who is quite a fairly quiet child, and I didn't realize until very recently that he was, in his teenage years, craving for friendship. He hasn't had a friend at church his age. He hasn't had a friend in our area too much around his same age. Now he has. Because of that, he has craved a friendship, and he's found it in some people in our community in the world. That concerns me. So we need to be... And you know, some of our children, we can read them like a book. We know what they're thinking. We know what they like. We know where they're at. Others of our children are hard to read. We don't know. And this particular boy, I didn't know. And if I had known, I don't know what I could have done. I could have prayed at least about that particular thing. So different stages of life, they need different things. But certainly I don't think living in the country isolates them at all. We know that what a child needs is mature adult influence, not peer influence. Peer influence will not elevate their characters,
but adult influence will. It'll improve their communication skills. It will give them life experience. It will just help them in all sorts of social aspects in life. Whereas peer friendship is good in short doses. It's really good for them to have that learning, that interaction. But yeah, it won't have the blessing on the character that adult interaction will have.
I was also going to add that socialization doesn't have to be in person. Like, obviously that's what we think of and it's still an integral part, but I've never had people my own age live like next door neighbours, like walking distance away, like even they see every week. And yet I have a lot of friends, a lot of close friends, and people I've been friends with for years. And so I guess it's just thinking outside the box again, you know. I've been writing letters since I was 7 or 8, something like that, you know. So it's, you can still have socialization through other ways and, yeah, have friends without necessarily living close to other people. And the other thing, I was just, like, a personal experience from our family, we, yeah, that was our situation. And, like, a few years ago, probably, I don't know, I guess 8 years ago or something, I guess I resented it quite a bit that, you know, we didn't have any friends around. And it seems like it was the normal thing that you have friends your own age that you see, like, really often. And so I was, like, deprived. But over time, like, looking back now, I can see that that was really the best thing because, yeah, our family is so much closer together, and also our relationship with God. Like, in that situation where church is not, you know, church is about God because that's all you have, you know. You're not worshipping, or sometimes worshipping alone and things like that. So it doesn't become a social thing. So for me, I know that if that was the case, I probably would have, you know, gone to church to see friends, right? Whereas if friends aren't there, then it comes down to God. And when that's all you're left with, that relationship really strengthens. I'm really thankful for that. That, yeah, God really used that to strengthen our family relationship and also our relationship with Him.
Any more questions?
So what is the key advice from you for a family who is going to transition to the country based on your experience?
Any specific aspect?
That's a big question, Rod.
I thought you were going to answer it. You've got the microphone.
No, no. He directed the question to you.
That's passing the buck. Advice to a family shifting to the... Okay, I'd like to give you some advice from a husband's perspective. Do everything you possibly can to make the transition as smooth as possible for your queen. As we've shared our experience, it's sometimes very difficult, and our ladies have lived in very difficult circumstances for a long time. You know, it took me three and a half years to build the house we live in at the moment, and it got to the point where our temporary situation was so difficult, you know, it was really affecting Desley. Under a lot of pressure, you know, affecting her mental health. Just, yeah. So it's our responsibility not to have everything perfect, but at least to have our queens knowing they have our hearts and that we're doing whatever we can to help them, to make it as easy as possible. Years ago, I was in Tennessee in the States doing some training, and I was really busy, very busy, focused on my studies. And Desley and Caitlin, our eldest daughter, was, I think, 3 years old at the time. And we were living in this, what do they call it in America, trailer. We were living in this trailer, you know. And, you know, it was pretty rough. Wasps. Anyway, and I remember this elderly gentleman, you know, very southern, very black, not very many teeth, very white hair. What a champion. Brother Johnson, his name was. And he came to me one day and he says, "Boy, you need to spend more time with your wife." And I said to him, "Yeah, I know, Brother Johnson, but you know, I'm here. I'm come all the way from Australia. I'm here for 3 months. I've got to achieve." And he said, "You didn't hear me, boy. You got to spend more time with your wife." And I go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And he said, another excuse, you know. And he says, "Boy, if mama ain't happy, nobody ain't happy. Now, you go spend time with your wife." And that's fantastic. For me, that was really fantastic. You know, have I always kept that in the front of my mind, made it my highest priority? No, probably not. You know, my selfish heart, my misguided priorities maybe, you know. My wife hasn't always been happy. And I know I haven't always been able to do what I can to. But the thing is, as a couple, as a father and mother, we need to be looking out for each other and we need to be united on what it, as much as possible. Doesn't mean we blend into being one person, okay? But we need to be one. So that, because it's hard, it will be hard, we all face different privations and challenges and we need to be tight. And there'll be times when you aren't tight, when it just becomes too difficult for her. And yeah, like Justin, you'll be out in the doghouse. You know, you mention it, man, okay. It'll be really difficult and the relationship will be strained, okay. And it's our role to humble ourselves as the husbands and lead in that reconciliation and really think about what we can do to make the lot for our wife easier. And if there's not much that we can do, you know, Justin struggling to build a house, an appropriate dwelling for his queen for 8 years, okay, he's put everything into it, okay, but I know that Yvette will appreciate the fact that as difficult as it is for him, that's what he's trying to do. You know, Justin used to live in Canada. And he loves the skiing, the snow skiing in Canada. But he hasn't gone for a single trip to Canada while he's been building that house. Okay? That's the focus. That's the priority. Providing for his queen and his two children is the priority. Through all of the challenge, and she will appreciate that. So that's one bit of advice I'd give you. Anyone else got... Yeah, Desley's got some advice for Jeffrey.
I think it's already been said that the greatest challenges are our greatest blessings. When everything goes wrong, it's okay. Sooner or later, you won't look at it as everything going wrong. Nothing may have changed physically, but your mind will change. Sometimes you just have to stick with it. We have to allow our children to go through hard times. As a parent, that's challenging. It's challenging not to provide for our children everything that they want or everything that society says they need. But it's actually better for them if we don't. It's better for them to have to work hard. It's better for them to have to sacrifice and to make those struggles with us. Engage them in the struggles. Let them know that the reason why we can't do that or we're not doing that is this, and we believe it's best for us all. We're all making sacrifices together. Yeah, and, you know, I can look back on my really hard times now and think what a blessing it was for me and my family. You know, as Rod said, I really struggled mentally at the end of my 4 years in the accommodation we had. And I was at the point where I was saying, "I'm moving out and you can come if you want to, but I'm going because I can't do this any longer." And by God's grace, a miracle happened and we got to move into our house very quickly. But at that time when I was feeling like that, there was no light at the end of the tunnel for me. There has to be a light. There has to be a light at the end of the tunnel to keep you going. And that light can be something really small, a goal that you're aiming for. But there has to be something there that you're reaching for together. And don't expect it to be smooth. And expect, yes, we're following the Lord, we're doing country living, life's going to be good now. No, life's going to be challenging now, more challenging than you've ever experienced, but But you'll grow with those challenges and you'll become the people that God, well, by God's grace, we will all become the people God wants us to be. We're still, you know, we haven't made it. We still have our struggles. I still have my dummy spits. By God's grace, he'll do the work in me.
Another bit of advice that I'm coming to realize the significance of very late, and sadly, in some senses, too late, and that is in the busyness of trying to hold your head above water, make sure you take time to spend with your children. Not just in work. You know, I work for 3 or 4 hours in the garden each day with my 3 youngest children. That's great, isn't it? I'm spending time with my kids. But they're not always there by their choice. Okay? That's part of their schooling. That's part of their life. It's not by choice that they're there. They'd rather be riding their horses or swimming in the dam. And so it's important for me as a father, and I've done this rarely to my shame, to put my work aside, which would gobble up 48 hours of the day, if that's where there was, to spend time with my kids. You know, Jack, my 11-year-old, it's shameful to even remember how many times he asked me to go for a swim in the dam with him last week. You know, we're busy with the garden. We're busy with preparing for the conference, etc. But he'd ask me 3 or 4 times a day, you know. I did it once. And I was there for 10 minutes. But you know what? It meant the world to him. He didn't ask me for another couple of days. So, spend time with your kids. Yeah. Justin, any of that? Anything come to mind?
Now that once the conference is over, are you going to go and have a day with your kids?
Or assume. At the end of conferences, catch up.
Actually, at the end of the conferences, catch up with the kids. I haven't hardly seen Rod here. Backwards and forwards. I've never seen Rod so busy. He probably has to catch up with the kids. And so now you're going to have to sort of practice what you've just been preaching. Because you've got to catch up on the garden. But see, Jack was happy with 10 minutes. In the dam, say every third day. And God is merciful; He's not asking for much.
I haven't swung with Jack in the dam since last autumn. This was the first time.
Yeah, but He asked you, and you're too busy, and so you can bash yourself up because He asked you. But at least He did it once, and He did it for 10 minutes, and He was happy for two days.
And you know why He was happy with just 10 minutes? Because I strategically did it just before lunchtime. So he was happy to run up to the house and eat lunch together. Every sermon should have more of an impact on the preacher than the people sitting in the pews. And so, Rena, you're an instant good friend. You've really challenged me here. Here you are, opening me up to bearing my soul. No, look, it's really interesting you ask that because I guess being a bit of a workaholic, I was back at the garden this morning picking beans and zucchinis and cucumbers, and since last week my cucumbers have put in between 8 inches and 2 feet of growth and they're hanging off their trellis strings. And I just had to stop and do it. You know, so I had to train and prune my cucumbers this morning. And as I'm walking past, I'm looking at my zucchinis that need all the dead leaves, you know, trimmed off so that the mildew doesn't get stuck into. And I'm looking at those tomatoes over there that need pruning. And I'm looking at the weeds, you know, over the last month. The weeds have just taken over. So catch up. I need all the kids and all of you to come and, you know, catch me up in the garden. But no, thank you. Thank you for giving me that challenge and setting my priorities right. Ladies first.
Why is it that we are so particular about our cucumbers and tomatoes and their training, but we neglect the important training? You know, we let those little things go in our children. When we first see it, we don't nab it and deal with it, but we let it go. It's a real object lesson that we can just be so focused on our work that we just miss those things in our families completely.
We need to finish up here. Just that
you can have the last
one. I just want to add to what I basically was going to say what Desley said, but women get their most satisfaction from their families generally, and men get their most satisfaction from providing for the family. So a woman can be flat out busy doing what she has to do, but part of that is always surrounding the family. I think that the temptation is greater for a man to put his children second. There's always work to do. Everything's also important. Like what Rod's saying, they grow up and they're gone in a blink of an eye. They're gone. And after they're gone, there's still tomatoes to work with and cucumbers and... In the end, who cares? Kids come first.
Preach it, brother. Any last questions? David.
So in relation to the conversation that we had with kids, I have a question about homeschooling, because I'm seriously considering myself. I haven't actually converted my wife just yet, because she's not too sure. She can see the benefit, but she's not sure whether we can do it well, that we don't regret doing it. But the main thing that I see is that, like, if you homeschool, like, I think we mentioned it before, that we get to spend more time with them as opposed to them spending their time with someone else that we don't really know what they believe in. Although we have our kids in our Adventist school, not all of them are Adventists and stuff like that, and the people that hang around. So I can see that my child has changed somewhat since they're starting to go to school. So I'm just wondering if there's any like tips. I'm not sure whether you have sent your kids to school first and then transition into homeschooling, but if there's anything...
I say preach it, mate. Homeschooling or don't do anything, mate. You got to homeschool. John the Baptist homeschooled. Jesus Christ homeschooled. The Israelites all homeschooled. And true education is reflecting the character of Christ. The school ain't going to do that to you, bro. It's you and your wife. Now, I've known some women who said, yes, I'm going to homeschool. And then you see them a few years later and their kids are at school. I asked the husband, why isn't your wife homeschooling, or why aren't you homeschooling? And he said, oh, we worked out my wife hasn't got the personality for it. Rubbish. Rubbish. There's one thing you need to do to homeschool, and it's denial of self. That's all it takes, because it's going to deny self. Your house, the food won't be as good on the table. Your house won't be as clean if your wife's doing it, because they can't do everything. In my humble opinion, I think you need to really strongly consider homeschooling. Apart from that, you just gotta do it.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.